It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 489 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Tyler Chin Tanner from A Wave Blue World. And of course, their website is awbw.com. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now for Deadbeats 2 London Calling, a musical horror anthology. He's got more great stories having to do with music and horror. And it's going on right now, and the main character is quoted as saying, "I haven't been back to England in what feels like centuries. I'm honestly not sure what's popular these days, but I'd like to take a stab at it," hence the horror book. He's got all kinds of great creators involved, taking all kinds of great chances and making great stories. We talk about that as well as some other new offerings coming out from A Wave Blue World, all of which I think you will enjoy. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show. It's time to catch up with Tyler Chin Tanner from A Wave Blue World, and that's at awbw.com. And you've got a Kickstarter going. How's it going, Tyler?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's good to talk with you. The latest Kickstarter is for a sequel for yes. Deadbeats. You and I have talked about this in the past, but you've got a new Deadbeats, Deadbeats 2. Was it London?
Calling, yeah.
Calling, that's right. That's
London Calling, yeah, yeah. Based off of the punk song.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the shopkeeper travels to London. That was our new idea for this one, to go off to London and then open up to some potential storytelling there.
Yeah, a music horror anthology. Mm-hmm. And let me read the little description on Kickstarter, because it's good. Deadbeats 2 London Calling is a 160-page full-color anthology of music-themed horror comics centered around the curiosities for sale at one particular record store managed by the enigmatic shopkeeper. This time around, you're just in time for the grand opening of Deadbeats' new London location. So, yeah, that's good. So I take it that the first one did pretty well then.
Yeah, the first one did really well in both the Kickstarter itself, and then we had a direct market release and even a book market release, as we have book market distribution. So I was able to get the copies out, you know, through a few different audiences. And so it was well received, and it seemed like people were interested in reading more stories. So that's why we put the second one together with even more great creators telling their version of musical horror.
It's great. Now, it's on Kickstarter. It's under Deadbeats 2 London Calling. And people get on me because I never give this soon enough for some folks. As the project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, July 1 at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And the goal is $25,000, and you're on, well on your way. As we're talking, you haven't reached it yet, but I'm sure you'll get there by the time.
The first couple days, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the some folks start off, it's, you know, the beginning and the end are always the big times, and in the middle it's a little slower.
Yep, for sure.
So that's why we're talking right now, so we can keep the momentum going here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Done.
Now, you've already got 100, as we're talking, you've got 173 backers.
Yep.
And I'm one of them.
Great, thank you.
It's good, yeah, because I really like your stuff. Before we started to talk, I was going through your website, as I mentioned, awbw.com, and you've got a lot of amazing books out there. We'll get to those, but let's stick with Deadbeats 2 for the moment. Yeah. It's got Eric Palicki, of course, who I've interviewed, and whose work I always enjoy. Yeah. Joe Carallo is the other editor.
Yeah, Joe. They edited the first one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good. They're both great editors and writers themselves. They got some good projects out there. that they've written. And this is Eric's been, this is the fourth anthology for Eric, because he did the All We Ever Wanted and Maybe Someday. And then Joe did the first Deadbeats as well. So yeah, it's great to have him on this, working with the creators, putting the stories together, shaping, you know, what's inside the content of Deadbeats too.
And you've got over 20 new comic stories with from more than 40 creators.
Yes, yeah.
So really good stuff. And of course, you've got, according to the Kickstarter, Lisa Sturl from Long Lost and Witch Blood returns to provide the cover with our interstitial narrative illustrations by Val Halverson from Finger Guns, which I really loved. That was a great book. I enjoyed
it.
It
was a really good series, yeah.
Good. Now, well, okay, I know it's like choosing between your children. And I'm sure they're all really good, because you guys don't do anything bad. You do really good stuff. Which ones would you like to highlight tonight, just amongst us? And I'm sure the whole book's going to be wonderful for people to read. What would you like to focus on?
I mean, we've got some great preview pages of the ones. There's only so many that I know so much of, but there's the one that Eva Cabrera worked on, the Art Police. There's the one I worked on with Morgan Beam, which was really fun to write, and so I can do that one. There's the Cosmic Symphony Rio Burton worked on. I don't know, you know, I mean, they're all, you know, pretty interesting. Some of them are still, you know, some script form. Some have been fully drawn. Some of them have pages coming in. So there's a variety. Yeah.
So when do you think the book's going to be available for people?
So we're going to get them out to backers starting in October. And, you know, it's a process depending on how many we get. And then it'll have its direct market release. At that same time. So October this year, just in time for Halloween.
Very good. Very good. It's going to be lots of fun. Musical horror always intrigues me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, music is always, it touches people in certain ways. And to be able to bring out horror with that is really something. And I think the last one was a good example of what you can do. So I'm just kind of fascinated. Was it doing a second one? Was that easier because you've been through the first one, or was it harder because now you had to try to find other stories to tell?
I think, you know, well, I mean, the creators are all new for the most part. Actually, we do have some returning ones. So I think they were excited to tell their stories, and they had the first one to look at as sort of a template, like, oh, these are the kind of stories that you can tell. And you know, what worked, what didn't. So I think when they were able to approach it, you know, they bring their own take and their style to it. But they already had a chance to see it, you know, done in practice. So, I think this is actually, if I had to choose, I'd say it's actually coming together better than the first one.
Yes. Sometimes when you've already done one, then you've got the process in place, and it makes it a little easier. There's a quote I love that the shopkeeper says. It says, "I'm honestly not sure what's popular these days, but I like to take a stab at it."
Yeah, I get those puns in. You know,
kind of witty and stuff like that.
That's what's fun about this anthology too, is it's got a main character. You know, you have a lot of ones that are anthologies, so they're different stories, so they vary all the time, but. You know, with a shopkeeper introducing the tales and taking us around, you know, it allows for, I don't know, some recognition from the first one, some continuation, somebody to really root for and find interesting, you know, in these interstitial storylines.
And I get a kick out of the fact she's a diverse female lead character, which of course I always like. I always think that's a great way to go about it. And if you look at the shop on the Kickstarter page, it's vinyl and CD and used records. And, you know, because it's such an interesting take to do, because today, you know, there aren't a lot of record stores around. Everybody's doing digital. So that's an interesting take to do. But, you know, it's reminiscent of how things used to be. So is that why you chose that kind of a setting?
Yeah, I think the idea was to give some sort of vintage feeling towards it. Some, you know, music fans that are like really into the old stuff. And, of course, things that are haunted are going to have some age to it. You know, they've been around for a while. So I think that's what she deals in, the really like ancient vintage type of artifacts and instruments.
Because some people, when I go to Walmart these days, I see plastic records, LPs and stuff like that are there. So, you know, I'm always intrigued that some people loved LPs, and I knew people who could build, you know, the little the players and put the little diamond needles in there, and they wanted the LPs and the albums and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a, you know, it's you might think this is out of date, but it's actually not. There are a lot of people who really like this kind of format.
Oh yeah, there are shops around that that still sell them. I think even the comic shop down in town with me had at least had a record section. Mm-hmm. You know, people selling classic ones. And I like to flip through and see which ones I recognize. Mm-hmm. Not that I ever got them. You know, I started with cassette, but it's neat to see the big cover art and everything.
Yeah. Now, and this one, of course, you're having a change of location. London, of course, mm-hmm. with like first thing jumps to mind when I hear London is the Beatles, all the British artists. Is this going to be more focused on the British artists rather than, say, the American ones in the first one?
You know, it's a pretty loose theme. There is some attempt to tie either British or European themes in with it, historical. You know, I did more of a medieval, you know, knights storyline just because of the location. But we wanted it to keep it pretty open. I mean, the idea is she's there searching for things, but it's a country that's been around for a long time. So people could have journeyed through with their items to have dropped off. So it's really not that limiting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, do something a little different.
Yeah. Well, the London, because, you know, I always point out to people, and I tend to really enjoy stories that come from Europe and Britain and stuff like that, because they have a different way of looking at things that sometimes I like is different from an American way of doing it. And so I'm kind of interested to see if that theme follows over into the book, because, you know, I used to buy Marvel for a while, was printing these European comics. Mm. And I got such a kick out of them because they were so different. They looked at things from a different perspective, and the stories were different. And I loved the fact that I couldn't tell what was going to happen so easily and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So did some of that spill into the book?
Well, I can tell you mostly with my story that I certainly tried to do something a little bit of that sense where I told it in medieval times. I tried to have like a grim fairy tale type takeoff of it. My story is called The First Violin, and it's about the, you know, fictional invention of the first violin ever. I don't know if there's much of a real story there, but this idea that it was a knight or someone who was trying to be a knight to fight for someone's love interest and was given a magical instrument. And then, you know, what you were saying is this twist at the end. You know, I don't think you see what's coming with what happens there. So, yeah, I was certainly trying to do something like that with my story.
Because I love that. American way of storytelling is – I've been reading American storytelling for decades.
Oh, yeah.
And so sometimes I can guess what's going to happen. And so for me to read European style is always a lot of fun. Now, I have to mention there's some names on the Kickstarter website. There's names I recognize,
yeah,
like Ron Mars, for example. And, of course, yeah. Eric Palicki's back in there doing the writing. Bill Messner-Loeb is going to be in there. How about that? That must have been something to get him on board to do that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, no, that was great to get him on there. Yeah, there's a good mix of veteran guys who've been around for a while, some people that are really killing it now, like you mentioned, Val doing finger guns, and then some up-and-comers too that, you know, we're giving either this is one of their early shots or their first shots to do something, but we think had the chops to do a story.
Jamal Igel is a good one.
Yeah.
Diverse. I try to remember. My problem is it's hard to remember everything, but he's done some really interesting books. Molly
Danger?
Yes.
Yeah, that was Kickstarter as well. Yeah, back early days of Kickstarter, relatively speaking, anyway. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he's. I certainly know he's done some DC books and a number of things. Trying to remember, and we've got. I think is it three returning creators, not counting Lisa on the cover, but Liana Congas, who drew Eric Balicki's story in the first volume, is back to do a continuation of that storyline, but she's writing it this time, and Adam Gorham is doing the art. So that's an interesting twist on what happened. The last one, it's the one story that has a sequel within the sequel. So I'm really curious to see that, how that comes together. Regine Sawyer wrote a story and is back for this one. And Kyler Clodfelter is back to do another one as well. So a little bit of overlap there, but mostly new creators.
Well, that's great. It gives it a whole different spin. I suppose if you get to Deadbeats 3, you go to Paris.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, Paris is pretty neat. Maybe we'll all be able to travel more by then, too. So we can head over there, do a tour.
Yeah, there's so many interesting things to do with that. I would love for there to be a Beatles-themed story in this. I wonder if there is.
I'll have to go look through the list of creators and see the stories, you know, and they're most all the scripts are in by now and all the artists are working. It's just a question of which ones I've read. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't want to spoil everything for you anyway. So you just have to get
That's right. Now, let me ask you something. Is the first volume still available?
It is, yes. Yep. You can get it either through Diamond Distribution if you're a shop with account there, or you can order it directly from awbw.com. And I'll send it out here with a sticker and a little, at least you get my signature if you order it from AWBW.
Very good.
On more signed copies, but you know, I haven't seen people for a while.
See, what makes me think that is in that initial sequence, she's walking and she's got like three ghosts around her walking in the famous Beatles.
Oh, yeah. That's a Beatles. That's Abbey Road right there.
Yeah. So that makes me think that there might be something coming. Mm-hmm. Along those lines. So anyway, I'm sure it's all going to be terrific stuff because there's been horror and music have gone together so well. I mean, as long as there's been music, there's been horror stories told in them. And so it's interesting to tell a comic with that too. Do you put any kind of songs to listen to certain stories while you're reading it or something like that? Does that happen in this book?
We haven't done anything organized like that. Maybe some creators might come up with some tracks. I don't know. That's something to consider. Maybe we can each have each team of creator come up with a track that goes with their song. And you can listen to like maybe the 20 tracks at the same time as read the 20 stories. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Work. Yeah. It takes you about 3.5 minutes to read a story, you know, a little less, a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be fun to have a list of, because some people put out lists of music to listen to while you're reading books.
Yeah.
I see that people do that. Now, particularly a music-based horror thing like this, that would be a lot of fun to have. You could always listen to them. You don't necessarily have to sell them. You could post a list, and people could organize them on their iPod or, gosh, does that date me, iPod.
On their iTunes or Spotify or whatever. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that'd be something to have.
That'd
be good stuff. So let's see, October is when this is going to happen. And, there's so many wonderful creators and stuff. It's going to be so much fun. I got to ask, because there's this one page that you're showing on there, the right by Eva Cabrera and Arosa.
Yeah.
It says "Truth is a Bullet" on there. Is that a song title? Can you give us just a little insight into what that's all about?
Oh man, no, I don't know.
You didn't know there was a quiz, did you? As far as
I didn't know, I did read that the first time when that came out, because I read the script like a couple months ago, and now I'm trying to remember if that's relevant or not. Because they're actually been ahead; that whole story is done. But yet we haven't got a letter to do it yet. So
Well, that's an intriguing title, if nothing else, because that's going to be something to see. It's just all kinds of wonderful storytelling.
Yeah, it's a good story, and I can tell you, I haven't spoiled it all by by putting this page up. So there's, I do remember that, that you're in for a treat still.
Yeah, very good. So again, it's 160 pages, which is really, really good. That's a lot of storytelling. That's a good read.
Yeah, no, I think the internal, it might even be a little bit more when we put it together, because as everybody's turning theirs in, it looks like it's exactly 154 story pages. So that's only accounting for six extras for like table of contents and things like that. So the book itself might be printed like 168. Yeah.
So even more than 160. Well, that'll be good.
Yeah. That'd be great.
And we need to mention too, this also includes the digital sketchbooks for both anthologies containing process art, character designs, and other behind the scenes material.
Mm-hmm.
This digital sketchbook will only be offered through the Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, yeah. That's something we like to do for the campaigns, you know, put it together PDF-wise and send it out to people and let them see just some of the early artwork, you know, what the artists did, character sketches or some cool layouts, the ink, you know, along with the color. So just get to see a little bit more of the process.
So the $25 pledge gets you the print edition.
Yeah.
Kickstarter exclusive. And it also gives you a sticker.
Yeah.
Involved with that. And your name in the thank you section and good things like that. So
I do my best to keep this economical and make people feel like there's a reason to back it early. You know, it's not going to be that long till it comes out because we also shortened that period a bit. But still, you know, they're giving their money early and I want them to make them feel like they're getting extra that you don't normally get. Like you can go to the store, but sure, you don't get your name in the bag. You don't get the sticker. And actually, in this case, we made an exclusive cover because that's part of it too. You know, and this isn't going to be the same one that's in stores. Unless those stores back the campaign, they can do that. That's the only way they have them. Yeah.
Now that you're bringing up something that intrigues me. This mm-hmm. I've seen this in more and more Kickstarters, and you have it too. You have a retailer bundle of 5 copies for $55, and then you get 10 copies for $100 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Are stores doing that? Because I see more and more Kickstarters including that kind of a level for retailers to get in.
We've always done that. I think.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm always happy whether it's a person or a store willing to back it, you know, in advance to get the copies. I think they just find it as a good way to make sure they have the books if it's something they really like. I know at first they didn't necessarily have distribution. Like they weren't going to be a diamond. So if you wanted this book for your store, you do it through the campaign and get them there. Now I distribute both direct market and book market. So people can get the book. So what we've decided to do is do these exclusive covers. So if a store wants to be one of the few stores that has this cover, as opposed to the one that we'll make available in the direct market, then they can back this and we'll send it to them. And I make sure I send it to them before the release date. So it's not like they're late having them or anything.
Okay.
So yeah, again, we just try to make it worthwhile for everybody.
Yeah, because it says it's estimated delivery is September instead of October. Only the United States. And the $55 one already has 3 backers.
Mm-hmm.
And the $100 one has 4 backers. So that's actually a very profitable way to do it.
Yeah. Now, the shipping is so tough. You know, this whole thing, one of the big, you know, banes of putting this together is the incredible shipping costs for international shipping. It's just gotten more and more expensive. That's why you mentioned that the 5 copies is only the United States, because it's like mm-hmm. just sending 5 books, you're already in the $70 range, right? So who's going to pay an extra $70 just to get 5? So, but I can send those same 10 internationally for that same box, you know, flat rate. Mm. Right? So that's why I had to do that. There's a few things like that where it's just like, man, this is just not going to be economical for a international backer, you know, which is a shame because I love to get books out all over the world. But yeah.
Well, particularly Britain.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just, I wish that was cheaper, or maybe I, you know, had a way to do that. But, you know, yep.
It's an interesting thing to do because, you know, these days, as you and I both know, the shipping is not necessarily as timely as we would love it to be. I sent my brother a box of comics, and it took him – I paid for 2-day shipping. It took a week and 2 days.
Oh, wow.
To get. So sure. I'm hopeful that your situation is going to be better than that.
Well, there were certainly a lot of problems before. That's when we were shipping out Maybe Someday. That was a tough time when I was shipping out Maybe Someday. It was just before the election. The post office was an absolute mess. I'm just going down there trying to send all these books, you know, these 700, 800 books out. And it was a nightmare. So I'm hoping that by the time we send these out, September, October, it'll be a lot better.
Mm-hmm. So, now, I noticed, too, in the video that your girls are at work.
Yes, bringing them to work.
They're getting trained early in their experience to help out.
Well, I've been taking Maddie to conventions since she was 4 months old. She went to San Diego Comic Con at 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because the two of them are funny, I have to say.
They're pretty funny. Yeah, they're pretty entertaining. Yeah. So we got them in the video. I got them working for it. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. When I had a friend of mine, when I was back in college many years ago, I had a friend who had a 2-year-old boy, and mm-hmm. he was already, because his father was a computer guy, he already knew how to do things on computers that I didn't know how to do as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, wow, you're giving that kid a huge advantage. Just wait till he gets to be an adult. His computer knowledge is going to be still vastly ahead of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
So here you're giving them that, you're involving them in the process is always a good thing because that'll help them understand, you know, what it is you do. And that's great.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think that's really helpful. It gives them the, you know, inside look because a lot of times you don't see that about what it actually takes to get this stuff done. So, and then I hope to hand it off to them so that I can just, you know, retire in 10 years.
Yeah,
I'm never going to retire from making comics, but some of the admin stuff and things like that would be great to kind of like have them if they take to it, you know. And I think they like that side of it. They're both creative as well, and who knows? Maybe they'll be drawing, or maybe they'll just be running some of the production stuff. Who knows?
It'd be fun. It'd be fun to see what kind of stories they would tell.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be fun to see because their perspective again will be very different because yours as an adult doing these is going to be different than when that makes me want to ask though, when did you get what? Because the first one of your books that I came across was Adrenaline.
Yeah.
Which I really loved. And I remember I saw you at a convention and I bought that there. I loved the fact you had a diverse female was the lead. You were dealing with subjects that at that time, even today is still timely, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A TV show, a reality TV show was the basis of the story. And right. I love that. I'm just fascinated. So was that the first one you wrote or was that the first one you got produced?
I mean, that's pretty much the first full thing that I've written. I mean, I've been writing like short stories, other ideas, things like that, just sort of around. But I wrote that I was still in art school. I was going to the Kubert School. And, you know, they do have a writing class. And I just started writing that. And I guess that was second year I started writing that because it started really coming. Wait, am I remembering it wrong? Yeah, I must have started in second year. And then third year, I really worked on it with some of the teachers in school there, looking over pages and scripts and stuff. So, yeah, I just kind of went with it, you know, and really happy with how it turned out. I mean, it was definitely like a first graphic novel in terms of just, you know, for all of us working on it. But, yeah, it came out really well. I'm still pretty proud of it. It's not like one of those when you hear creators that are ashamed of their first works or don't want it to get out there, which is natural because you know, you got to learn while doing too. So,
see, that's the thing. People, they look back on it and say, "Ooh, I could have done this and ooh, I could have done that." But you did the best you could when you were doing it. And that's the wonderful thing about it.
Yeah.
Such a great book.
Say how I'd improve it or do it again. You know, I could start the script fresh and just rehash it, but you know. Yeah.
Well, hindsight is 2020, they like to say.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. You look back and see that and stuff. But I love that book. But you've done a lot of books that I've really enjoyed. All We Ever Wanted, I thought was a great book. And these are all, by the way, at awbw.com. I wanted to ask you about a couple of the ones I don't know about.
Because
there's some really interesting stuff out there. You know, we were talking about the fact that reality TV was one of the things. There's a story by Stephanie Phillips that really intrigues me. Avare, I think it's called.
Avery, yeah.
Avery, and the thing, yeah, it's all about social, it's been about social rank, and there's an app in charge.
Yeah, yeah, rank. So that was our AAA title, and just came out in April.
Wow.
And, you know, I have the second one coming out in August, which I wrote, The Orphan King. Yeah, it was a really interesting idea about this app that gives you a ranking, and it's not just social media. It actually affects your advantages in real life, you know, where you can park, where you get to work, what restaurants you go to, you know, the different clubs, the access to different things, all sort of based on how you're doing socially on this, on the social media app. So it's like you get points, and it starts, instead of like, you know, having to earn money to get access, if you're earning your social points.
Yeah. See, that's fascinating, because, you know, I mean, it always gets me today when you go someplace, and particularly now that things are starting to open up a little bit, you see people constantly sitting with their phone, mm-hmm. and, you know, communicating, running apps, stuff like that. And so to have an app that actually physically affects real life, that I got to read more about. I think that's
right, because if you're at one of those restaurants and you're posting about it, and you have a lot of followers and your interactions, well, you're helping that restaurant. So now it's like they're just taking that to the next step, where it's like, well, now you're allowed into these, you know, if you have this sort of influence, you know, online, then you're allowed in, and this and that, and so it becomes this currency.
Yeah. just a fascinating concept to me, because I always like stories. I have to say why I do this. I work on a little paper that is for, it's largely for older adults. And so as such, they rarely put current topics in it. They don't talk about apps. They don't talk about, you know, computers and stuff like that, because they consider that to be, the older people who would sit and read this, they wouldn't understand any of that. But I am an older person, and I understand it. And so to me, whenever I find a joke or a story about that, I put that in there, because I want people, because I think that they seriously underestimate people, older people, and think that they only like, you know, old stories and old jokes and stuff like that. So for me, right away, that catches my attention, because I want to see how that works, because I could see that really happening.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's not too distant future where it like really could happen.
Now, let me ask you something, though. It's $16.99 on the website. Is that digital or is that physical?
Yeah, it's a physical book. $16.99.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, because I'll have to, tomorrow I get money. I come back to this website and I might stick to it. Now, you mentioned a book that you did, The Orphan King, number one. Talk about that book.
All right. Yeah. So that's our second YA one title. The book comes out in August. The premiere edition, so the first edition print copy that we do, came out a couple of weeks ago. So that's a process where I print the first, since we don't print all 5 or 6 issues leading up to the graphic novel, I just print the first one as well, along with some exclusive bonus material, like the character designs and stuff. And then the book comes out 2 months later. The concept is it's kind of a twist on the King Arthur myth. It's not exactly King Arthur. I changed the character's name, so I'm not adhering to too much of the myth, but you're taking that same sort of idea. You know, he was born into, you know, the royalty, the royal family, the king and the queen, and he goes off and trains. And instead of it being Merlin, I've kind of combined the Merlin and the Lady of the Lake, the Lady Talisa, who's his mother's aunt, trains him to be this good king and this and that. But there's a bit of a twist when he comes back and he's got a sword and everything, and he's supposed to inherit the throne. Well, it's too late. The kingdom's already been destroyed. So now he's sort of cast adrift in this world that doesn't really recognize his birthright, so to speak. And he needs to learn a lot about life and ruling and what it's like, you know, to be part of a community and a kingdom, and for what, you know, what's good for the people instead. So, yeah, it's kind of just really extends the journey of discovery and figuring out how to lead.
Now, there's another book that fascinates me just by the name of it and a little description. It's called Embodied, and it says it's an intersectional feminist comics poetry anthology. Layman's terms, what does that mean?
All right, so that was our previous anthology. It just came out in May. It combines modern poetry and comic book sequential arts. So these are all modern artists writing on the theme of the body. And instead of just having them illustrated or vignettes, we brought them to artists and said, we want to turn this into a narrative, use sequential art to tell a story that fits with this poem. So it's really taking the strengths of both, the word play of a poet and the, storytelling skills of an artist and bringing them together in a way that hasn't quite been done before. We've seen these illustrated poems and vignettes or whatever, but we're really trying to do something a little bit different, but it also hit a theme that's very relevant today and would be compelling for people to read it.
Yeah, it's $16.99 and 200 pages.
Yeah.
Color soft cover.
Yeah. We really try to make that economical as well. We've been doing our best. I mean, that's, being a small publisher and trying to reach a, audience, it's tough and it takes some investment here and there. So one of the things we've really been trying to do is, lower the, sort of like the entrance, fee to get in and make these books cheap if we can, $16.99 for a soft cover is $20, best that we can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. That just sounds interesting because now's a great time for that. Now, there's another book that's already got a sequel to it called The 27 Run.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what that is about first, and then there's already a sequel called Crush to that. What's The 27 Run about?
The 27 Run is Mechs versus Monsters. So it's almost like if Pacific Rim already happened and the humans lost, right? Mm. Now there's so it's a post-apocalyptic world, but some of the mech pilots have survived. And in the first one, you think there's just one, and he's got this one mech to try and fight off the 27 monsters that are now ruling the planet. But in the sequel, we find that there was actually another mech pilot there too. And that's Betty, and you can see her on the cover of the Crush one.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So is this going to be like an ongoing series?
Don't know. I mean, there's two for now, and they're both, as much as it's a grand sort of epic, they're self-contained and, in themselves is this, adventure within each one of them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Cause that's kind of a fascinating thing. Post-apocalyptic stuff always grabs me. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested. How do we survive? How do we do it? It's interesting. It's a interesting, counterpoint to like maybe someday, which is more optimistic.
Right. Yeah. That's the idea that hopefully we won't have a post-apocalyptic earth. Though some of them took it, even for the positive visions of the future, took it to mean like the apocalypse happened, but now things are getting better, and we're mm-hmm. building a better world from those ashes.
Mm-hmm. Now you're getting into, you talked about a little bit about poetry and stuff, but you're getting into more literate kinds of things. Like I think it looks like Ghastly Tales by Marguerite Bennett.
Those are a couple of short stories. That was a mini comic that we did. So the artist who did the adaptation of Phantom of the Opera, which we put out at the end of last year, he had done three short stories with Marguerite, before he got into Phantom. And so he presented them with me and we, decided to put them together in a little, short run comic book and put those out. And so I don't really have any of the comics left. Those sold really well. I remember I was at Heroes Con. Marguerite had a table just down the way. And so I brought them down to sell, and she kept coming back for more. She's like, can I have 10 of those to sell at my booth? And like that afternoon, she's like, can I get 10 more? So she went through. But they were really neat. Three, ghastly or horror tales that she
wrote. Yeah, and then you got Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Which is a great-looking book. And let's see. Well, I remember you sold this one for a couple of years. This Nightmare Kills Fascists.
Yeah. That
when you did.
Technology we did a few years ago. So that was sort of like the before the All We Ever Wanted, when it was like politics and everybody was sort of angry. And I mean, not that we're not now, but I guess maybe when the anger was fresh, like we were more tempted to like write and read about it. Whereas a couple of years later, like we just want like something positive here. So, you know, a little bit of balance.
And you and I talked about Loved and Lost once before, which I think was a great.
Oh, maybe that was our first talk. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. So Loved and Lost was my second anthology. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably the first one you and I talked about on Kickstarter and stuff.
And that one I wrote all the 9 stories myself. It was 9 stories and worked with different artists for each one. It was all on a theme about relationships that don't quite work out, or at least not the way that you expect, which is kind of a weird thing. I guess it's maybe it's a tough sell in some way to be like, why would I want to read about those stories? But people who have read it, you know, I think they really enjoy it. And it's very satisfying because that's life, you know. I mean, you have more relationships that don't work out than do. So, you know, I really enjoyed working on it, enjoyed writing it, and really happy with how it came out.
Mm-hmm. Now, two more. One, I think we'll go back to the other end and wrap up there. From Hell's Heart.
Yeah.
Of course, I remember Khan saying that in Star Trek. From Hell's Heart, I stab at thee, and you know all those good things. That is John Arcudi.
Yes.
Edited that one. So talk a little bit about that one, because that one looks kind of interesting to me.
So that's a Herman Melville tribute, which is what the line is from. It's an art book, so it's illustrations that were done on Herman Melville's work. It was came out for his bicentennial. We got it out just in time. It was a rush to get that. It was coming out, coming up, and of course, the publishing world, so it takes a while. And this was even pre-pandemic. But yeah, it's filled with some amazing illustrations, some U.S. artists, some European ones, just doing Bartleby, Moby Dick, of course. Trying to remember some of the other things, stories that he wrote, but a very, very, they're not all just Moby Dick and Ahab, drawing a bunch of things from the things that Herman Melville wrote.
And then, yeah. Now, there's another one that gets me too. It's Jack the Radio Creatures.
Yeah.
Intergalactic premiere.
We try to do a lot of different kinds of anthologies and even some music ones. So Jack the Radio is a band. My good friend George Hodge is in it, and he put together this comic book based off of it. So he took each of the tracks, you know, the 10, 11, I can't quite remember the amount of songs were on it, and had an artist draw a story to go along with each one of those songs. So it kind of mirrors the album. You know, you can listen to the album, kind of like what we were just talking about with the playlist, except for this is actually the musician and the writer of the songs and the stories, you know, working with his band on one, working with the artists on the other. So, yeah, it was really neat. It was a great, great comic. That came out right as the pandemic started, because we were going to release it at Heroes Con, and he was going to play music there and go on tour. And we kind of just had to be like, well, you know, order it digitally or we'll send you a copy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but it was a really great comic.
Wow. Well, there's other books that I'm interested in, too, called Mezzo.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, Mezzo. Some of the...
Yeah, Mezzo is going to be another volume too. That was a Mesoamerican styled fantasy epic. So it's completely fantastical world, but I based it on the archaeological finds of Maya and Aztec ruins and what's been discovered about that, and used that to create a mythology on this fantasy world. And we're working on volume two. We're really excited about it.
Okay, and this is all at awbw.com.
Yes. And may have a complicated name, but at least we could make the website simple, right?
Of course, a Wave Blue World is like a Brave New World kind of illusion.
So that's good.
Very, very good stuff. So it's all kinds of clever stuff. Now, just before we go, let's once again talk about Dead Beats 2 London Calling. It is on Kickstarter. It's going to end again on Thursday, July 1 at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I encourage you, don't wait. Get onto it right now so that you can support it and make it happen. And hopefully we'll see a Dead Beats 3.
We'll see. Back this one. So we'll be able to do a third one as well.
Well, Tyler, there's always great things going on, wonderful books that you're putting out, just fascinating stuff to read. I get a little more money, I'm going to get to your website and start ordering a thing or two, because I think there's some good stuff on there I'm behind on, so I want to catch up on them. So all I can say is you guys do such wonderful work. It's just amazing, the creativity and the fun.
We really try to focus on the quality, you know, and if we're going to do something, we're going to make sure that it turns out, you know, really great and people enjoy their experience. We don't want any duds out there, you know. If you want to pick up our book, you know, it's going to be good.
Well, they all are, believe me, so just keep it up.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, appreciate the support.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.